And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and the rest of the region this Friday, January 24th, 2025. A woman is allegedly beaten to death while in the custody of Western Equatoria authorities.
Anybody involved in criminal cases should face the law. This is what people of Iba want to see, because these two women were arrested. They are supposed to be kept by the police or in the prison.
And a road construction project in central Equatoria comes under scrutiny in connection with alleged illegal logging.
The director of the logging company said, "Suke sukara ita fidera bitana," and he mentioned it like four times that I am in their target. And from nowhere, a gun was cocked and pointed at me.
These stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities of Western Equatoria State's Iba County say they are investigating allegations of brutality after one woman was allegedly beaten to death and another critically injured by three Criminal Investigation Department officers, along with another police officer. They say the officers were investigating two sisters who were babysitting their nephew when he went missing. Matea Samuel Timotio reports for VOA from Yambio.
Iba County Commissioner Wilson Tetela on Friday said one of the women went to Madebe Payam on December 30th to pick up a child from her brother. The three-year-old got lost after they went to work in the garden and is still missing. Tetela says the police arrested the women on January 1st and held them in a detention. On January 13th, the women were taken to a hospital after they had been allegedly been beaten in police custody. One of the women, 60-year-old Lois James, later died from her injuries. The other woman was unconscious when taken to the hospital. Tetela says he ordered the four officers involved in the case be arrested, all of whom were taken to Yambio for further investigation.
Anybody involved in criminal cases should face the law. This is what people of Iba want to see, because these two women were arrested. They are supposed to be kept by the police or in the prison. Right now, they are searching for the boy. The two women were arrested, and the statement was taken from them, and they were kept in prison. But what was the cause of bringing them back to the police station and from police station again proceeded to CID department and beaten to death? If somebody has been arrested, then that person should be kept, because we are the government. We are not supposed to kill someone.
We are the government. We are not supposed to kill someone.
The search continues for the missing boy. Justin Taban is the deceased woman's brother. He says his family wants justice.
We want to see how the court will judge the case between us and the relatives of the missing child, because the child got lost, which is their right, but no one intended to kill the child. The incident happened accidentally, which was not planned. We want to know what the law says about that.
Major General Philip Madu, Police Commissioner of Western Equatoria State, confirms the four officers are under investigation.
We will refer it to the court, the statement of the witness, and that's why I cannot tell you the information now, and they are in the prison.
The case is now in the court and they are in the prison.
Tameko Isaac is the civil society coordinator in Iba County.
We want to see the perpetrators being taken to the law so that justice can prevail. This is inhuman, because those who were arrested were just suspects. We are calling upon our government to take note of that. With this instance, civil society in Iba, we are calling upon justice to prevail, and we want to see the government compensating the family as well.
Under the South Sudan Penal Code of 2008, those convicted of intentional murder can be sentenced to death or life in imprisonment. For VOA News, I am Matthias Samuel Timotheo, reporting from the Western Equatoria State's capital, Yambio.
A government road construction project in Keijo Keji County has ignited controversy with local communities and activists saying it's nothing more than a facade for widespread illegal logging activities. The Keijo Keji County Commissioner says this was to facilitate a road project launched by the governor of Central Equatoria State. The Ministry of Environment and Forestry, however, issued an order to end the ongoing illegal logging activities. Dennis Lagonye reports for VOA from Juba.
A local musician and a security coordinator for Keijo Keji County says they were ambushed on January 18th and narrowly escaped being killed by gunmen protecting illegal loggers in the county. Anti-logging activist Suke Sukari told VOA on Thursday he was targeted for bringing to light illegal logging activities in the county through his online postings.
The director of the logging company said Suke Sukari itafidera bitana, and he mentioned it like four times that I am in their target, and from nowhere a gun was cocked and pointed at me. But of course, while they were trying to remove my phone forcibly and I refused, then they were harassing the security coordinator and trying to remove his phone. Then also another soldier cocked gun and pointed at him at the same time.
He says Dominique Wani, director of Santos Petroleum and Timber Company, was at the scene when they were attacked. His company had a contract with the county to remove logs cut to build the road. But Suke says the company also illegally cut down trees. VOA calls to Wani for reaction were not answered. Godfrey Datarembe is a military officer assigned as security coordinator for Keijo Keji County. He says he is waiting for the report by an investigating committee to explain why his fellow officers pointed a gun at him.
By law, in any other organized force, pointing a gun to a senior officer is a crime, of course punishable, but it will be handled administratively after the investigation.
The commissioner's office says the trees were being felled to facilitate the road construction project after the state was unable to secure funds for the road construction. County Commissioner David Delisi says loggers were only told to collect the trees cut down for the road project in 2022 and 2023, but breached the deal by cutting fresh azalea trees after that time. Yose Kei, a local chief in Kangapo Wan Payam, expressed dismay over the renewed logging activities.
Since I started working, many people have been encroaching on the forest on their own, some on these sites, others in Abaya, Nini, without any report. I have realized that from 2022 to 2024, some new beneficiaries have appeared in Keijo Keji who do not care about the chips. While on my inspection, I found 20 old locks collected from a total of 97 locks, including new ones. We had nothing to do because we don't have any authority. We just left and let them do it.
Suke says despite the ban on logging, loggers have started using other routes to transport illegally cut trees. He's urging the security services to ramp up efforts to stop the logging.
The pretext was that they're collecting the logs that were left down after the order of the former governor banning logging. But on the ground, there were new trees being cut down while they leave the old ones as a pretext that whosoever comes to see would see that the logs down are the ones being loaded. But yes, you can see that they're loading new ones. So it is an excuse to cut new trees down.
4 days ago, Josephine Napon Cosmas, Minister of the Environment and Forestry, issued a new order to end all illegal logging in the county on tree species such as mahogany, vuba, azalea, balanites and acacia.
It is critical that immediate and effective steps are taken to stop the rampant illegal exploitation of forests throughout South Sudan. Failure to do so is a sure recipe for desert encroachment. To curb urgently the rampant illegal exploitation of forests throughout South Sudan require collective actions at national government, state government, county, Payam, and community levels.
On Thursday, Central Equatoria State Governor Agustino Jadala summoned the commissioner and ordered an end to the road project pending a report by the investigation committee. Illegal logging is a global environmental issue because it reduces biodiversity and contributes to climate change. Keijo Keji remains a hotspot for illegal logging despite several previous orders banning the lucrative activity. Last year, unknown gunmen attacked a Vietnamese logging company called Clintwood. Several people were killed, including a national security officer protecting the loggers. Some 500 people were displaced in Litoba village. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Lagonye reporting from Juba.
The Sudanese Armed Forces and paramilitary rapid support forces on Thursday accused each other of burning Sudan's main oil refinery in El Jali suburb, north of Bahri City of Khartoum State. On Wednesday, the SAF and allied forces controlled Hajar el-Asal area in Nahr el-Nir in River Nile State and made headway toward the El Jali oil refinery, according to eyewitnesses in the area. Huge columns of smoke were seen yesterday morning, rising on El Jali oil refinery and covering the skies of Bahri and Omdurman around the nation's capital. The sound of gunfire could also be heard. In a statement, the SAF accused the RSF of setting fire to the refinery and called the action criminal. It said the RSF resorted to the arson after the army closed in on all of its battle fronts. The RSF issued its own statement, accusing the SAF of dropping barrel bombs on the refinery, leading to its total destruction. The paramilitary group called the action a war crime. It said that it will continue its, quote, struggle to liberate the Sudan from the grip of the extremist Islamic movement, end quote. Thousands of civilians have been killed in the conflict and millions have been displaced since the war began in April of 2023. UN agencies are sounding the alarm about the surging violence in Eastern Democratic Republic of the Congo and the risk of an imminent attack by the M23 rebel group on the region's largest city. Africa News Tonight host Yehias Wuhib asked reporter Sabidi Jafar El Akanti, who's in the city of Goma, to describe the heavy fighting around the city that has displaced thousands.
Now the Eastern DRC is hell because fighting ongoing for like 2 weeks nonstop in the province of North Kivu and South Kivu. I'm based in Goma, where fighting are just 20 kilometers west of the city and around 15 kilometers north of the city. And, you know, Goma, the hub of the Eastern DRC, was the homeland of many people and many IDPs decided to stay, to come in Goma, fleeing atrocities in their villages and cities. And now, as fighting are really close of Goma, the situation is complicated. And many rockets from the front line are landing in some neighborhoods of Goma, and this makes a lot of victims. And many people have been killed and other injured during this week.
Jafar, you're saying fighting is going on. Who is fighting who?
M23, backed by the Rwandan army, attacked the DRC army forces in their position in Sake. And since not only in Sake, but in different zones, but I say Sake because Sake is really close to the city of Goma, and fightings are intense as FRDC won't permit M23 to take the control of Sake because Sake is the last point before Goma. That's why I say the situation is confused because many detonation, even now in my neighborhood where I stay, for each 2 minutes we are hearing detonations of bombs coming from the M23 side or from the FRDC side.
And Jafar, the number of people displaced has now surged to more than 400,000.
For now, the situation is rough because it's even more than the 400,000 people, because those are the ones registered by local NGOs. But many people are not being registered. And the their situation is so bad because for around 6 months, there is no humanitarian assistance in all IDP camps in and around Goma. And these people are facing the baddest situation of their life because they don't have food, they don't have potable water, they don't have medication, they need everything which they don't have, unfortunately.
And also, Jafar, human rights violations, including looting, injuries, murders, kidnappings, and arbitrary arrests of displaced people mistaken for rebels, have escalated. Is that report true?
Yes, that's true. You know, this war has also the ethnic face. When M23 rebels with Rwandan army take the control of a city which is a Hutu majority, they kill people, they do massacres on Congolese Hunde, as they are Tutsi, you know, the conflict between Tutsi and Hutu people. Not only the massacre, but sometimes they enroll young people by force in to join their movement in order to increase the number of fighters. And these reports are really true, as all NGOs in the zone had already reported on it.
That is reporter Jafar El Khatanti. He was speaking earlier today with my colleague, Yehias Ruhib. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up on South Sudan in Focus, manufactured diamonds put a crimp in the African diamond industry. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Several African countries have for generations depended on income from diamond sales to boost their GDPs. But with gems now being manufactured in laboratories, these revenues are shrinking, forcing diamond producers to think up new ways to make money. Darren Taylor reports.
Botswana is the world's largest producer of gem-quality diamonds. The International Monetary Fund says the stones make up 80% of the country's exports and one-third of fiscal revenues. Botswana's gross domestic product is around $20 billion, with a quarter of this consisting of diamond sales. But laboratory-produced diamonds are cutting into the country's revenues. Lab-grown diamonds are chemically identical to natural diamonds, but are cheaper. They also are less environmentally damaging to make compared with mined gems. Botswana is just one of several countries, including Angola, Namibia, and South Africa, that no longer can count on diamonds to be an economic mainstay. In Botswana's case, it's investing in agriculture and copper to make up the shortfall. Nosi Mzamo, the chief executive officer of South Africa's state diamond trader, says it's time to market natural diamonds as luxury exclusive products.
In South Africa, we have been in this space of mining diamonds for over 100 years. So we thought then for the country, let us be the one who are marketing the natural diamonds and making sure that the current generation understand the importance of natural diamonds, what they do to communities, what their impact is, and also then ensure that our clients that we're serving, they are able to market the diamonds that are cut and polished by South Africans.
Each naturally mined diamond is unique, says Mzamo, and has a story behind it. She says the diamond industry must start telling these stories to compete with laboratory jewels. John Bristow, a former executive at international diamond mining giant De Beers, sees opportunity for Angola, Namibia, and South Africa. He explains that many years of heavy flow of rivers such as the Okavango, Orange, and Vaal have exposed what he describes as diamond pipes. He says these are vertical structures in the Earth's crust that contain diamonds.
And those diamonds that sat in the top parts of those now eroded pipes have been transported down our big rivers to the West Coast. At the West Coast, we have amazing marine and coastal diamond deposits on our old beaches. And we have wonderful alluvial deposits all the way down the Orange and Vaal River to our West Coast.
He says Southern Africa's diamond producers should mine these deposits of alluvial diamonds because they're sure to yield fantastic gems. But before such opportunities can be harnessed, says Bristow, governments need to cut the red tape stifling their diamond industries. He says that unlike in mining nations such as Canada and Australia, most African diamond industries have little access to information about property deeds or cadastres and which areas are actively being mined and which mines have shut down. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
The Naija Market in Calgary, Canada, showcases the cultures of African immigrants and serves as a place for communities to connect. Arzuma Kampori has more.
In Calgary, Canada, the culture of the African diaspora is seen at the Naija Market. Here, Nigerian and other African cultures and cuisines make up this vibrant indoor market. Olaide Fashola is one of the vendors. She shares soul food from Nigeria.
I have fufu. This is fufu. Fresh and frozen from Nigeria. So I have sobo. This is sobo tea. It is made. It has a lot of ingredients, 100% organic. You come here, you network, you meet a lot of people, a lot of vendors. It gives you childhood memory. So that's why I came here, to make sales and to mingle with people.
But it's not just about business transactions. Niger Market event organizer Abiodun Adetu says it's also about how immigrant communities can thrive in new lands.
It's about community. Our children are happy because most of them haven't even gone back home. So coming here, they say it is a whole new game to them. And they're like, oh, is this how a typical African or Nigerian market looks like?
In its 2023 annual report, Immigration, Refugees, and Citizenship Canada highlighted a record of about 438,000 permanent residents admitted in 2022, with over 20,000 from Nigeria. However, the numbers only tell part of the story. Titulola Akinro, a community member, says the market is a venue where diaspora communities connect.
When you move abroad, one of the things that people struggle with is loneliness. If an event like this is in your city and you come, you meet people, you network, you're looking for a job, you're looking to start a business, you have people that do exactly what you want to do, and it's a good place for you to start from there.
For DJ L, who only goes by his stage name, it's an opportunity to share traditional music.
Niger Market gave me that opportunity to come out and showcase what I do to the new people that come in.
For attendees like Katie Fornell and Anne-Marie Cotton, organizers of the annual Okotox Film Festival, the market bridges two worlds. Both shared their excitement.
Outrageous. We're just having the best time. The energy here is...
For many, a place to feel at home, a world away from the country they left behind. Arzuma Kompaore, VOA News, Calgary, Canada.
U.S. President Donald Trump laid out his approach to foreign investment to the world's largest gathering of global business leaders, offering investors a take-it-or-leave-it deal to build in the U.S. or face stiff tariffs. VOA White House correspondent Anita Powell reports on the implications of Trump's return to the White House for the global economic machine.
President Donald Trump stood, virtually, before the prime movers of global industry and flourished his carrot-and-stick approach to foreign investors seeking a bite of the world's largest marketplace.
My message to every business in the world is very simple. Come make your product in America, and we will give you among the lowest taxes of any nation on earth. But if you don't make your product in America, which is your prerogative, then very simply, you will have to pay a tariff. Differing amounts, but a tariff which will direct hundreds of billions of dollars and even trillions of dollars into our treasury to strengthen our economy and pay down debt.
Trump's message stood out from that of the other major powers at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, which stress multilateralism at this annual international gathering on public-private cooperation, where top figures discuss global and regional challenges, including environmental and energy issues, geopolitical shocks, and how to improve living standards and stimulate growth. Trump called for a fair relationship with the world's second biggest economy, China. China's Vice Premier Ding Xuexiang presented Beijing's stance.
Economic globalization is a result of social progress and technological advances, and it cannot be stopped. Protectionism does not solve problems. And trade wars help no one. We should take every chance to guide economic globalization and move it toward a better stage that is more vibrant, inclusive, and sustainable.
Analysts explain the logic behind Trump's onstage commitment to guarantee supplies of liquefied natural gas to Europe, a move some of them worry could push prices higher for Americans. Phil Galston is a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution.
Eliminating European dependence on Russian oil and natural gas is a really important foreign policy objective for the president. I know he was very critical in the past, especially of Germany, for authorizing the Nord Stream 2 pipeline and of allowing an actual increase in German and European dependence on Russian fossil fuels to develop.
Those who heard Trump in person shared their impressions with reporters afterward. This year's event drew 3,000 attendees from more than 130 countries. Espen Barth Eide is Norway's foreign minister.
Well, you know, I think that what we Europeans should take out of this is that we should strengthen our work to consolidate economic growth, you know.
Stuart Eisenstadt is a former U.S. diplomat who served as an advisor to former U.S. President Jimmy Carter.
It shows one reason why he won the election, which is he speaks forcefully. You may not agree with everything, but he speaks with a great deal of force.
And Agnes Callamard leads global rights watchdog Amnesty International.
It's a vision solely centered on an American vision. There is nothing about the rest of the world.
Discussions about some of the world's most pressing issues continue through Friday in this tiny town in the Swiss Alps. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
It's now time for our weekly listener comments, and we begin with Major John Barr, who says, let the government ease communication for progress and betterment of South Sudan, as quoted, information is power and a vital tool for prosperity. Benjamin Yai Madak from Juba writes, much appreciation to our South Sudan in Focus team at the Voice of America. I'm grateful to be part of your presentation. I sent you my favorite songs to tell the world that I'm a Sudani, as sung by Mohammed Wardi. I got freedom by being separated from Sudan as a South Sudanese citizen, but still proud of my fellow Sudanese. And Giet Gabriel Atem in Juba says, good evening, VOA. Congratulations to the upcoming 47th president of America. These are the lessons that Africans will learn. The transfer of power in a democratic process looks like it is very difficult for Africans to learn from the Western democracy process because they are not politically aware of how things are done. So Africa needs more knowledge to get to the world of transparency, accountability, and fair elections. Thanks to all of those who wrote in to us. Keep those comments coming. That wraps it up for us this Friday. We invite you to check out voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you somehow missed this broadcast, just head on over to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. We now leave you with the song Como Saba by Diamond Platinums with Khalil Harrison and Chile.
Baskupuli mizwa
Wezombe
Sugu misum zimba Baskosho inge kinga Segu bali sela Baskupuli mizwa Sugu misum zimba Koma sava Koma sava nana Aye sava Aye sava nana
Koma sava
Koma sava
listening to the song Como Sava by Diamond Platinums featuring Khalil Harrison and Schley. I'm your host, Carol Van Dam in Washington. On behalf of our engineer, Patrick Dea, and producer, Kwame Afori, thanks for tuning in. Have a peaceful weekend, everybody. We'll talk with you again on Monday on another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
When
na nangat namshange pata pata. Ati koma safa na na mina ngisthandela isthenzo ma. Masikhohlwe ngenkinga, sekubhalisela, masikhuphule imizwa.